Welcome to EMG Transformations with Dan Stoll. Each episode will empower you to ignite your inner fire and provide methods to maximize your mental and physical performance. You never know how one valuable insight can make such a big impact. Please leave a 5-star review if this episode leaves a positive impact on you. And don't be shy to screenshot and share episodes on social media that you find helpful so we can spread the message and make the world a better place. You never know who may need to hear and the impact it has on them too. We're only scratching the surface. There's so much more to learn. Subscribe and stick around to manage stress, improve your health, and create lasting lifestyle changes. Buckle up and get ready to spark your transformation with Nova Fusion.
3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome to EMG Transformations. I'm stoked to feature the coach behind your favorite coach, Matt Schneider. Matt is a serial entrepreneur, strategic visionary, investor, leader, and much more. Notably, he's the executive vice president and equity owner of FitPro Tracker, as well as serving as the chief of operations for Dr. Gabrielle Lyons Young Medical. Prior to Matt becoming a successful entrepreneur, he spent 5 years in special operations on SWAT and was a TFO on the United States Marshals Office Fugitive Team. After this time in law enforcement, he founded his first company in 2013 after scaling and selling the company in 2019, and he was brought on board with a national brand as the executive director, which led to his serial entrepreneurship. His entrepreneurial profile includes founding and leading multiple ventures, including Memento Mori Capital, Ubuntu Couples Community, and consulting and coaching dozens of 8- and 9-figure entrepreneurs. Guys, it's time to whip out those journals, get the phone notes ready, because we're diving into a masterclass with Matt. Thanks for joining us today, man.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it, man. It's good to be here.
Yeah, man. I just heard your story, heard some of the lessons that you were dropping and the lifestyle that you live. And I knew that this was a guy that I just had to reach out to as get in my life and also get on the podcast and just share some of this wisdom that you have. So I'm super pumped for this episode. And I always start these conversations with going back a little bit and peeling back the layers. And for those who don't know you, I'd be interested to hear more about, you know, some of those experiences and struggles even that shaped you into the man that you are today.
Yeah, man. So we all have an origin story. And, the reality is, Dana, that nobody gets through this life without the peaks and valleys of it, right? And the various conflicts and trauma and lessons, the hard lessons learned. As it relates to how I became the kind of person that I am today, you know, I'm the product of a tremendous amount of restarts and men just coming and going out of my life when I was an adolescent. And my mom she didn't grow up with an understanding of what healthy relationships look like herself. And unfortunately that cycle didn't break when I was young. And so, she always had guys coming and going. She didn't marry all of them, but she is currently on her 9th divorce now. I've only met one other person that can challenge that number, because it's not something that you typically see, right? So as a result of that, we moved a lot. New schools, relationships would start and stop. And it just led to a lot of uncertainty as to where we would be from one, month or year to the next. But there's a lot of benefits and things that I've considered to be superpowers I've developed that I'm sure we'll get into here throughout the conversation. But I grew up in Eastern Idaho in Idaho Falls, graduated from high school there, went through the police academy in 2001 and got certified in both patrol and detention From there, I went to Boise State University in Boise, Idaho. Most people know it for the blue turf. And I got my degree in psychology. And then I was with the Ada County Sheriff's Office from 2006 until 2014 full time. And I stayed on as a reserve until 2019, but I became an entrepreneur in 2013. And we sold that company in 2019, as you mentioned. Tremendous amount of lessons along the way. But as I mentioned, the amount of resiliency and ability to adapt and overcome as a result of my childhood has served me very, very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And talking about that emotional resiliency, like that was one of my questions that I had going into this, and you're already bringing it up. So I just want to cover that, because in a guest speaking where we actually met, where you came into the mastermind, you mentioned how emotional resiliency was one of your core values. And, you know, I've never heard someone, you know, explain it the way that you did and why it's so important. So I'd love for you to touch on that, and especially with, you know, your backstory and upbringing, like how those two go hand in hand and why that emotional resiliency factor is so important to you.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a tremendous amount of regret that comes in people's lives when they react to circumstances versus respond to them. And to me, when it comes to being emotionally resilient, it's this understanding that in life's journey, we get knocked on our ass all the time. And there's countless circumstances where things don't go our way. And we're introduced, whether we like it or not, into adverse environments where we have to navigate ourselves through it. And the worst thing that we can do when we find ourselves in any kind of adverse environment is to be reactive instead of responsive. And the reaction in almost every scenario is due to emotion. And our emotions can be liars. In many, many cases, whatever is causing us to be emotional is not the full story. And it's not the totality of the circumstances. It's just like a snapshot of what's happening. And so I learned early on that there is massive benefit to having a level of stoicism. And rather than just like flying off the handle or having some sort of knee-jerk response or snapping back, it's to be more thoughtful about what is happening and considering the fact that there are other stories to be told. There's other angles to look at. There's other experiences to consider. There's other, opinions to take into account. And so this emotional resiliency thing is really a matter of getting up when we fall down, understanding that other people have viewpoints. And even if those viewpoints are completely on the opposite end of the spectrum of ours, we can still have a very valuable conversation and a non-emotional conversation in the process. And so it's through emotional resiliency that I believe we're able to have less regret because of the decisions we make, we're more thoughtful and less emotional.
Yeah, that's so good. And it took me many years to learn that lesson, but I'm so, thankful that I have. And really, stoicism is what put me down the trajectory to understand that, hey, you don't have to react to every little thing that happens. Take a moment, respond, and then put your best foot forward in the best direction forward, rather than emotionally reacting, putting yourself backwards. Now you got to make up for that misstep, and it just becomes this downward spiral. And so for me, with my health condition and Crohn's disease, it was so hard to even find those steps of like, where can I go? Like, that was this constant, just one step forward, five steps back for me. And it wasn't until stoicism, where I just started getting control of my mental space, that was where I could start getting control of my physical body at that point. And so then the healing started to come. But it wasn't until, this mental, emotional stability came where I could even get to that place. And so I'm curious, because I asked you before, like, where did that stoicism come into your life? And you mentioned how it was very early on. Did that come with like your studies in college with the psychology degree, or where did you get introduced to that?
I think it was really much more natural than that. And due to environmental exposure, you know, when you have all of these starts and stops and these resets and you're just a product of your environment when you're a child, and you don't have any say so as to what city you live in or what part of town you live in or what school you go to, you know, I found myself just developing the ability to self-validate and to reassure myself of the effort, the energy that I was putting into things, and not seeking approval and validation from others. You know, when you're constantly, you know, starting and developing new relationships, and at home, there's a lot of distraction that's happening for a variety of reasons. You have to go inward, and you have to look within yourself to determine whether or not, you know, you're showing up the way that you want to show up, and whether or not you're putting in your best effort, and whatever it is that you did or you said you were going to do, you did it to your very best ability. So, you know, I think just growing up in a place where I developed that self-soothing and self-validation, while at the same time, it was always okay. Like, everything always worked out. And, you know, there was the times where we would go forward and then we would go backwards, but it always worked out. And I also learned that, you know, as I got older, that I started to develop the power and the control to change my circumstances, right? So as I started becoming a teenager and certainly into an adulthood, I moved from that adolescence and childhood into being a young man and to a full-blown adult. And as I went through that journey, I just developed more and more of the understanding that if I didn't like my circumstances, I now had the ability, I had the power and control to change those circumstances. And that that includes whether or not I was going to allow for the cycles that I was growing up in to be repeated. And as a husband and as a father myself, I determined a long, long time ago that answer is no. I'm not going to repeat those cycles. I'm not going to put myself, my child, I've got one, I didn't know how many I was going to have back then, and my wife through that. So, you know, I'm really happy to share that, you know, my wife and I will be married 18 years, over 20 years together this year, and our son is 14 years old. And so, you know, and that's just all a result of just taking ownership and getting in the driver's seat of my own life and determining that I do have that power and control, and I'm going to exercise that power and control. And I'm not going to point fingers at other people as to why my circumstances are the way they are.
Mm. You know, that's so inspiring to hear you say that, because everything that you talked about there is just this radical, you know, accountability and awareness. And it's things that we can all do, and we can all do that in our own lives, but it's so hard to, you know, get that third party perspective sometimes to see the big picture. And especially for you growing up, like, it just sounds like you had this awareness at an early age to be able to see the patterns and course correct. Whereas a lot of the times we're in that victim mentality where it's just life is happening to us and, you know, this is just the way things are. But you kind of had that, just that mindset that, no, I can control things a little bit. I can maneuver things and course correct. And, you know, that's really just inspiring from a young age to hear that you had that type of mindset. And I'm curious, because for me, basketball was always my outlet to get out of the house with an alcoholic father. So I'm curious, when things were, you know, not so good at home, did you have any outlets that you naturally gravitated towards?
You know, it was my friendships. And I also developed this understanding of the importance of the people that we surround ourselves with, and how some people, they had this kind of energy that lifted you up, and then there was others that had the kind of energy that brought you down. And I you know, look, when I was younger, I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I didn't know, you know, how I was going to be impacting the world. But what I did know is I wanted a good, healthy, fulfilling life. I didn't want to be, you know, struggling in important ways, and and that I wanted to be able to create the life's journey that I determined was the ideal life journey for me and my family. And so real early on, I was able to look and see some relationships are going to serve me really well and others are not. And so I chose really good friends and I stayed out of trouble. I didn't get into trouble when I was young. And either were those that I was hanging around. And so, you know, more so than I played football, and I played some sports and things, but more than anything, it was having a group of friends that just stayed out of trouble and wanted to be good kids. And I liked the way that made me feel. And, I liked not having to feel like I was ever going backwards in my path.
Yeah. And so did you ever deal with those like temptations or those peer pressures even? It sounds like you had like a really strong foundation with your friend group, but as those distractions come in, was there anything that, you know, those shiny objects even that kind of pulled you away early on?
Or, you know, yeah, I mean, those shiny objects are always there. They're there then, they're there now, you know, they'll be there in the future. I mean, the shiny objects are always there. The people that would like to distract or disrupt will always be there. And I just never really fell into those traps though. I think just this early adoption into, I have the ability to decide, and having the kind of personality to say, I would go to the parties, but I wouldn't do the things, right? And if I drank, it was, you know, it was not extensive. And I just didn't fall into the traps. I didn't allow it to happen. I was always okay with saying no and just drawing a boundary and sticking within that boundary. And, you know, so many issues and problems for people come back to the fact that they allow others to get into the driver's seat of their own lives, or they allow others to pick up the pen and start to author, you know, their destiny. Or they aren't willing to get out of the bleachers, and get onto the field and start actually running the ball themselves in this game called life, you know? And for those that do that, they truly are a passenger, and therefore they are subjected to all kinds of things that otherwise don't serve them well. And it's because somebody else wants it for them. And I think when you're a child, that's just the name of the game, right? Like that's just it. You don't have any other options. But when we become grown men and grown women and we want to be treated as adults and consider ourselves as adults you know, be taken seriously, well, then there is no more allowing other people to get in the driver's seat of our life or author our own destiny. Like we've got to do that ourselves. And so I think I maybe picked that up earlier on than others. Yeah. Because of all the lessons I was learning earlier on of the things that I did not want to repeat, right? Like I was exposed to a lot of things where I was like, I don't want this to be part of my future. So I'm just going to do the opposite. And I just started doing the opposite of a lot of the things that I was experiencing. And to start that was just fine. It served me really well. But then as I grew up and became a grown man, you know, it's much more strategic than that, but it's still a matter of just staying in the driver's seat of my own life, and I'll never allow anybody else to get in it.
Yeah, that's so good. And something for me in just growing up in school, I was always trying to be this people pleaser, and I always really, you know, cared for other people's opinions more than I cared about my own opinion. And so that was this thing that I had to shut off myself. But, you know, that's why I had so many questions about this, because it just sounds like you had this sense of security and comfort in yourself, and you didn't have to go outside of that for any validation or anything. Like you had that certainty within, and that's the thing that we all truly need in life. And, you know, sometimes it takes longer to get there, sometimes it takes shorter, but once we can get there, you know, then life becomes you know, in our control, and we have the power to create the life that we truly desire, because everything truly does start as an idea. And one of the coolest things to me is creating those ideas and manifesting them into reality. So, you know, that's when you can really get in the driver's seat of your own life. And I wanted to touch on your time in the SWAT as well, because that just first perception on that, like, it just takes a lot of discipline to, you know, be at that level. And that's something that I would assume that would just continue to carry over in your life and, you know, other things. So I'm curious, during that time in the SWAT and just those times of your life, what skills did you learn that carried over into entrepreneurship and business?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I kind of going into the whole environment of like the superpowers that developed of based off of the upbringing that I had. You know, there's a lot of people that what they do is they reflect on their past and they allow that to define their present and define their future behavior. And you can't do that. You have to look at your past and you let your present self define that past. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can use the things that happened to you in the past as a crutch and an excuse for poor behavior and the reason why your circumstances aren't where you want them to be and you would like them to be. Or you can, the present self can look at the past and say, what can I extract from that past? What lessons can I learn to make me better? And how can I improve upon whatever? And based on those things that happened, how am I showing up in a really positive way in this world? And so when it came to the SWAT, you know, things are happening very fast. They evolve really, really quickly. And in, you know, most cases, you're going into environments where you don't know where people are at. You don't know how many people are armed or, you know, you don't know much about anything. You don't know much about the layout or what's happening, you know, with furniture and things. So it takes a tremendous amount of discipline and it takes a tremendous amount of training and repetition to be able to, you know, execute with precision in really dicey, dynamic, you know, circumstances that are evolving very quickly. But that's where this emotional resiliency really, really served me well. And this stoicism served me well because it can really be very easy to let your emotions start to take over, because make no mistake about it, you know, you are in fight or flight and you have a heightened sense of everything when you're in those really problematic scenarios. And there's always this element of fear too, because there's not a whole lot we have control over. Once we make entry, right? They know what door we're going to be entering through. They know the lay of the land. They know where weapons are at. They know where the hiding spots are at. And then it just became this lethal game of cat versus mouse. But being able to keep this awareness and not allow emotions to take over, that's what allowed myself and the rest of the team to be able to time and time again enter into these certain scenarios and just dominate them and come out with the most ideal scenario that we could produce. So, you know, the SWAT team, 5 years of that, plus the 2 years with the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Team, where what we were doing was hunting down the most lethal, violent criminals that were on the run. That's when the U.S. Marshals get involved. And that stoicism, emotional resiliency, ability to execute, those are what served me well. When I transitioned over to entrepreneurism, what I extracted from that and I pulled into entrepreneurism is a lot of the stuff that people don't see in the movies and reading the books and things. And that's the four things. That's teamwork, leadership, problem solving, and communication. Those are four things that if every person personally or professionally got much better at and more efficient in teamwork, problem solving, leadership, and communication, their lives would improve. Their businesses would improve. Their relationships will improve. Their finances will improve. Now, those are four elements that, generally speaking, if one or more is absent or one or more is compromised or not as optimized as it should be, there's a negative outcome for it. So I pulled those in entrepreneurism and that's kind of one of my secret weapons for success in all the different companies we have.
That's awesome. And I'd actually like to pick apart one of those, the teamwork. That was one of my questions here is, how do you assemble the right people together to build that strong culture that thrives over time?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, nothing really significant is ever built alone. And I actually reject this you know, outlook that some people have that they're self-made. I don't believe anybody is truly self-made. If they've accomplished anything great, they're not self-made. And it always takes a team. And what that team consists of are other people who are completely aligned with the mission that you're on, the vision that you have, the core values that you demand. And they want to be a part of that journey. Now, you know, in business, every business owner, every entrepreneur, what they want is a building full of people who are just fully committed to the success of the company. And in too many cases, these entrepreneurs and leaders, they don't focus enough time and energy on making it reciprocal, right? And making sure that the people that are helping with that success and driving the company forward and are responsible for, you know, the year over year growth, that they are really well taken care of, and that they are seen as a team member versus an employee. And when it comes to my coaching clients, you know, what one of the things that we always ensure they are doing is understanding what the dreams and goals and aspirations are of each person on their team. You know, if you want to build a really successful company, know what every person's dreams and goals and aspirations are on your team, and help them understand how it is that as they help the company grow and succeed, the company is going to reward them by ensuring that their dreams and goals and aspirations become realized. And that's where I have found tremendous amount of success and a tremendous amount of team cohesion is, first and foremost, making sure that the only people that are on the team are people who they are firmly aligned with my core values. If they don't align with the core values, there's no place on any team within any company. That's a must. And then beyond that, it's a matter of just making sure that I'm doing my part to optimize their time and their talents. And I'm going to get the maximum amount of outcome from them if their time and talents are being optimized. And then over the long haul, if their dreams, goals, and aspirations are also being addressed along the way, then I can consistently put more and more on their plate. I can consistently lean into them to produce more and to grow. I can consistently raise the bar for what the company is going to be producing and generating the, you know, year over year. And they consistently show up and rise to the occasion and are part and parcel of that growth and that success. And that this is like the symbiotic relationship that that's been built. And I at no point ever forget or lose sight on the fact that without them, the company would not thrive. And they know it and they feel it, and it's very evident. And as a result, I'm able to step away further and further and make myself more obsolete from the actual daily work and operations, which allows for me to then expand into other areas and have even greater impact. So that's how I pull in that special operations into the teamwork piece of it, but making sure that they are at the forefront of my mind at all times when it comes to the success of the company.
Yeah. I asked one of my friends a similar question, and he said to remind yourself that you work for your employees and the employees don't work for you. And, you know, as a business owner, like from an outside perspective, you know, you may think like, oh, employees, they work for the owner, but no, it's the other way around. And when you have that mindset, that's when it goes into everything that you just said, and knowing, you know, really caring about your employees. Like, they're not just employees, they're people, they're teammates, and you want to know their goals, dreams, and you want to collaborate together to make that happen. And you got to know what their goals are and set them up as intrapreneurs as well, so that they can work in your company. And, you know, that's actually like the ideal employee that you want is those ones that, you know, see a company within the company. So those are the
best. Totally, man. And I, you know, I label it a little bit differently. So I work with my team. So rather than work, they work with me, not for me.
Yeah.
And vice versa, right? So we work with each other. And the way that that shows up is I actively seek their opinion and I actively seek their insight. And I recognize that while I'm the visionary of the company, they each bring their own level of expertise, their own background experience personally and professionally. And while they may not have a C-suite position title, they may, you know, not have what someone would be considering to be the most advanced role or responsibility within the organization, they still have opinions and they still have background experience that they bring to the equation. I mean, I've hired them for a reason, right? And they bring value to the organization. And so this approach of we work with each other is, as long as they're fully committed to the success of the company, then why would I not want to know what they have to say about something? So, you know, in most decisions, not all, but in most decisions, in our weekly team meeting, we're talking about where the company's going. We have a weekly scorecard. So we're seeing where things are trending, and we have open dialogue and conversations. And I'll tell you that because we have such a high level of trust within the team, they don't have any problem challenging a decision that I make, asking why, offering a different maybe solution or saying, have you thought about this? And I always welcome it. And I think that that's been massively important to this whole thing. And if I ever got to a point to where my ego got in the way or I wasn't open to their feedback, certainly if they felt like there was any kind of negative consequences for providing feedback, pushback, they're not going to give it. And then all of a sudden I start having to make decisions in a silo and I'm not being given the opportunity to hear from them, which is a really important thing. So that's the only slight difference is the way I look at it is we work with each other. They don't work for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you're setting up that safe environment as well. It's open communication. You know, they can go to the head guy and, you know, have, you know, a difference of opinion and that can be okay. And a lot of places, you know, you can't do that at all. It's like, you know, you'll get a bad remark, you know, you'll get put down. Why'd you say that? Why'd you go against me? Whatever the case is for that. So I'm curious more on how you set up that positive, safe environment. Because we talk about, you know, the environment of who we surround ourselves with, but now that like working environment and that physical environment, what are some things that you do to optimize that for your workforce?
Well, I mean, this is a mindset that I have. And so this is the way in which I see success being built and continue to get bigger is by way of not underappreciating what the team has to say or offer. And I wish I could say that that's the case for all entrepreneurs or all, you know, leaders within an organization. And I know it's not. And unfortunately, those are typically the organizations that experience higher turnover and they deal with retention issues and they lose really good people, which people like me are thrilled about because then somebody who's really talented becomes available and we're going to bring them on board and crush it together, right? So I think that when it comes to fostering this environment and relationship, first of all, I read a book some years ago. It's called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. And Patrick Lencioni is one of my favorite authors. Most of his books are done in some sort of parable. Five Dysfunctions of the Team talks about the five things that must happen in order to have a really high performing team. And trust is a foundational piece of it. Without trust, everything else is compromised. And so I think, you know, having the, I have this way and I push this on and help my coaching clients understand the value of this, but having a CEO mindset with a white belt mentality. And That CEO mindset is just, we're going to accomplish really big things together. We're going to really have greater impact together than we ever would alone. And we're going to have this opportunity to help each other build a more and more fulfilling life. And as that CEO, it's always thinking about what can be accomplished and having dreams that are so big and so vast that anybody that works alongside me, their dreams fit within it. The moment you have an entrepreneur or a leader of an organization that they think or dream smaller than others on their team, that is a problem, because those people are going to feel stunted. They're going to feel like their opportunity is to grow and to, you know, be challenged is not there within the organization. So it's all those things that CEO mindset, that white belt mentality, is to never pretend like I've got everything figured out, because I don't, and none of us ever will, right? There will always be more that we don't know than we do know. And a white belt mentality is all about asking questions and being curious and genuinely seeking feedback and considering that feedback, and never having the kind of ego that gets in the way of recognizing I've got blind spots, and those blind spots could lead to problems. And so let me have others help me shine a bright light on those blind spots so that they don't compromise our success. And so that being my mindset and it being genuine allows for me to not chase the dollar first. I don't chase the money. The money is a lagging indicator of doing things well. Instead, what I do is I focus on building strong, cohesive teams, building organizational clarity to where everybody knows where we're going and why we're going there, making sure that the team is target locked on our mission and our vision. And then we do the things really well, then the money flows. The money is a lagging indicator. It always comes as you get things done. And so when I focus on the team, we get more stuff done, which inherently means we make more money.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to hire people with those same core values that you mentioned, because then you guys are all going to be on the same page. When something comes up, you know, you guys are on that together. It's not going to be, you know, a confusion about it, or how should we handle this? It's like, we know how to handle this. This is how we operate. This is what we're going to do. Now let's go do it. And, you know, there's just this cohesive unit to the work that continues to flow. And something that I try to remember more often than not is, be happy but never satisfied. Mm-hmm. Bruce Lee is a mm-hmm. big mentor of mine, and mm-hmm. you know, he's really showed me that you can be adaptable and still, you know, navigate through those things and create your own systems. And so mm-hmm. that's a big part of just my life, is being happy but never satisfied, and always looking for those golden opportunities and those good spots, because they're always there and they're always coming if we look for it. And, you know, some things that you've been saying, I keep hearing EMG over and over, with those experiences, learning from them, and then moving in a new direction, course correcting, or just finding where that growth is. And, you know, it's a mindset that we can all apply no matter what scenario we're in. So I like that you've been just casually dropping different examples and not even probably realizing it, but that's the theme of the show here. So I think that this is turning out great. And I just love that CEO mentality with the white belt. I don't think I've ever heard it, but I've heard that a black belt is a white belt that's never gave up on themselves. And mm-hmm. you know, that's where that humility comes in, to just never give up on yourself. And, you know, drop the ego a little bit too, because when we get the door shut on us over and over, or we just keep on, you know, going through these failures, that's where we can start thinking down about ourselves, or we thought we were all great, but then, you know, these failures really knock us off. But, you know, just maintaining that mindset of, you know, you're never finished. There's always room for improvement, and, you know, you can do this. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. And I, you know, I have this conversation with coaching clients often, where, you know, not looking at things as the grind, but the process. Mm. And, you know, there's a lot of people who they almost celebrate the fact that they're in the grind. Like, this is a grind, and like they're grinding, right? I'm just grinding. But if you really think about it, what happens to anything when it grinds long enough? It becomes a vapor, right? It becomes ground so small that it's susceptible to the slightest breeze and being carried away with the slightest breeze, and it falls apart. So the just like being a lone wolf, like, we're not designed to be lone wolves, and people celebrate being a lone wolf. Like, don't celebrate that. Like, that's, you know, that's not something to be celebrated. Rather than looking at things as the grind, look at it as the process. And just with the mindset shift that happens there, it's interesting how much easier it is to adapt and overcome, you know, the ebbs and flows of life and the different valleys that we find ourselves in and the different peaks we find ourselves on as we go through life. You know, I've got a t-shirt with Bruce Lee on it that says, "Be happy but never satisfied." And it's one of my favorite jujitsu t-shirts, actually. And I'll tell you, when people adapt that mindset, you know, what it's essentially highlighting is that life passes us by really quick. And if you're willing to do the work on a day by day basis, there'll be times where you'll look up and you'll realize you've come a long way and you've accomplished a lot. And that should make you happy. The unsatisfaction part of it, is you're nowhere near full potential. And if you're willing to continue doing the work, you can be better tomorrow than you are today. And so with that, I mean, first of all, it's completely true. But secondly, and this is almost kind of like a word of caution, it can make it feel like life is a grind, or business is a grind, or family is a grind, or finances are a grind. It can feel like, because you're always pursuing more, you're always pursuing the next thing. And you're always asked the question, okay, we've gotten here, that's great, but what's next? And, you know, you'll have friends or family that will say, you know, "Dan, like, you've accomplished so much. You're only 25. Like, look what you've already done. You've done more than what most other kids in your age have done. And why can't you just be happy with what you've gotten and just relax?" And that could be tempting at times, because you're like, "I have accomplished a lot." But stopping there is the equivalent of taking your foot off the gas pedal in life. And that's where the coasting starts. And coasting is just a sure way to find yourself getting to a life of mediocrity. And mediocrity, in my opinion, is a slow death. So, you know, the way in which you can keep your foot firmly on the gas pedal and continue being happy and also never being satisfied is to see things as the process. If you're going to be building anything big, whether that's a family, it's a bank account, it's a business, it's impact, whatever that big thing is, it is full of valleys, it is full of peaks, and you're never in one area for long, right? And it's just a matter of going through the process. If you're going to reach a peak and you're like, "This is great, but what's next?" and you're going to start eyeballing an even higher peak, you're going to fall into some valleys along the way. That is part of the process. It's not a grind. That is part of the process. And picking yourself back up is part of the process. Adapting and overcoming is part of the process. Mentorship and coaching, all part of the process. And just eliminate this element of grind from the equation and just look at it as, this is what it takes. And if you don't want to do what it takes, if you don't want to go through the process, then just take your foot off the gas pedal. And life can become way easier if you stop chasing such big audacious dreams. It's like, it gets way, way easier. It's really hard to constantly be, you know, shooting for the stars and you know, find yourself landing in the clouds. It just stay on the city streets. It's easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why they say negotiate the price in advance, so you know what you're going into ahead of it. And then when you're in those tough times, it's like, "No, I said I was going to do this. I knew this was going to happen. I knew this was coming. Am I going to give up now, or am I going to keep on going?" That's where, you know, it's not only the discipline, but the commitment that you made to yourself beforehand. That's where that comes into play. And, you know, talking about those processes, I had a conversation recently about process versus outcome goals. And, you know, we all set these outcome goals at the start of the year, or just things that we want to achieve. But It's really peeling back the process and the task that we need to do to achieve that goal. That's what really matters, because if we don't do those things, then the chances of us getting there is going to be much more slim. So focusing on that process, like you just mentioned, is truly, you know, one of the biggest things that you guys listening can do. It's not about that end goal. It's what can you do on a daily basis, your standards, your habits, what can you do there to move yourself in a better direction for tomorrow? And tomorrow you're going to be getting new results because you're putting in that work. And so to follow that up, I'm curious, what are some of your daily processes or your habits and routines that you do that, you know, expand and maintain your success?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I look at life as a game of inches, and, you know, we're stacking one or two things on a daily basis. We're stacking wins or we're stacking losses.
Right.
And, you know, for anybody who wants a better future, you know, and this is the thing too, Dan, everybody can define what success looks like to them, right? They can define what wealth looks like to them. Your number and my number may be the same. They may be different. And success is defined very differently, by people, but whatever that is, the bigger it is, the greater the impact that you want to have, the greater the legacy that you want to achieve. You know, we all have the same number of hours in a day and the same number of days in a week and month and year, right? And so on a daily basis, it's just a matter of how many wins did you stack versus how many losses. And, you know, did you stack 5 wins and 5 losses? So today was kind of just like a neutral day. Did you stack 30 wins and 4 losses? So it was clearly a win, by a long shot. And, you know, as the days go on, how many days did you stack more wins and losses, and what did those numbers look like? You know, how productive was your day? There's a lot of people that wonder, how do you accomplish so much? How do you get so much done? How have you achieved all of this stuff in the last 12 months? Because I've lost a few pounds and, you know, but the account looks pretty much the same and our life looks pretty much the same. Not a lot has changed, but yet you've done so much in 1 year. Well, the number of wins that I stack on a day, in a week, in a month, and throughout the year is tremendously different and more than some of my friends that have much lower goals. Now, if that year could still be a success to them because what they achieved was, I want to have virtually the same amount of money in the account. I want to weigh, you know, 4 or 5 pounds less, and otherwise I still want to be married and, you know, have a healthy relationship. And that's what they would consider to be a win and success to them. It's a low bar in my opinion, but they don't have to stack a lot of wins throughout the year. They just have to stack more wins than losses. For you and I and others, your listeners that have a big audacious goals, we have to be productive. We have to be really target locked. And so, you know, answering your question about routines and process and things in my life, my family, we do jujitsu. We've done jujitsu since 2016 together, and we've competed a whole bunch in it. You know, there's a lot of lessons that are taught in jujitsu that apply to life. You know, there was one that Professor Gigi was talking about to the group as a whole when he said, you know, if you don't make problems, you don't have to fix problems. And of course, what he's talking about is this move. Like if you do this sequence correctly, it sets up the move and you're going to get the sweep. If you don't, then, you know, you may get the sweep, but you're going to use, you know, 60% more energy to do it. And if you get it, by the time you get it, you're burnt out. So he says, just don't make problems and you don't have to fix problems. And I think how applicable is that just in life, right? If more people didn't make problems in their own life, they wouldn't have to fix those problems. And so one of my systems and processes, like, dude, I'm going to stack more wins today than losses. And I'm not going to make problems in my life. I don't need somebody to be connected to my hip to tell me that's a good idea or that's a bad idea. Like, I just know, right? Like, it's not a knowledge problem a lot of times when it comes to nutrition or exercise or, you know, relationships or, you know, this DM comes in from this chick. Like, is that a good idea or a bad idea? Respond to it. Like, you know, is sending a dick pic to this chick a good idea or bad? No, I'm married, right? It's like, it's so, the reality is, dude, that it's just a simple process of identify what you want to achieve. Like, just define what success looks like to you at the end of the year. Don't go further than that. That's like beyond a year in today's day and age, as fast as things move. It's like, it's too far. Just a year out. What do you want to achieve 12 months from now? It's coming whether you like it or not, assuming you don't get hit by a bus. And in order to achieve that, stack more wins and losses. And if you want to like have a really epic year, stack a lot of wins on a daily basis, eliminate as many losses as you can. The days that you do have losses and there are more of them than wins, those are going to happen. Pick yourself up, be resilient, you know, lick your wounds, get back to work. Tomorrow's a new day, stack more wins and carry on. That's my overarching approach to this whole thing and navigating life without putting myself in a box.
Man, I feel like I can just mic drop the episode off of that. That was fire, man. I'm absorbing all of that right now, and I know I'm going to run that back myself and just apply some of those lessons that you just dropped with us. That was just really good. And, you know, hearing from the standards that you have, like, again, these are all things that we can chalk up our wins. You talked about the scorecard for your business. I think it's basically the same thing. Like, I know there's a habit scorecard with the Atomic Habits book. I've taken it a level with the emotional scorecard. So when I'm feeling off, I'll just track my emotions for a week. I'll see where I'm at, and then I can go from there. And so stacking those wins on a daily basis as well, that's another way to do it, is like, am I making more wins than losses? Am I going in a more positive growth direction, or am I not? Like, what needs to change here? And that's something that you can change, your daily habits. Like, you can do more things to be productive, time block your time, like, just make sure that you make these commitments that you're going to follow through on to take those actions and get those results. So I love that you broke that down, and I feel like this whole conversation, you just make it so simple. Like, these are really strong, powerful ideas, but you're just breaking them down in such an elegant way that we can easily just apply to our lives. So I appreciate just the wisdom that you're sharing with us today. And I got one last question before we wrap things up. This has been incredibly valuable here. I would say, what's been the greatest lesson or piece of advice received that has made the biggest impact on you?
You know, I would probably say that that leadership is always the problem and it's always the solution. And the reason why that comes to mind is because of the micro lessons that are all built within it, right? And one of them being that that, you know, if we're willing to hold ourselves accountable and not blame other people, the moment you start pointing your finger and blaming other people, that's giving them control, right? That's saying that your outcomes of your life are because of them. And that goes directly against that, you know, I was talking about earlier, where, you know, you have and always have and maintain that power and control to change your circumstances. But leadership, like, if you're experiencing problems in your life, you're lead yourself better, right? And lead yourself in a better direction, lead yourself to better decisions, lead yourself to less negativity, less drama, less conflict, less toxic, like, lead yourself first. And that will solve problems. If you want to continue with whatever the positive things in your life, continue leading yourself in a direction that's producing those kinds of results. Cause, you know, Dan, the reality is that we will always get to the things we accept in this life, right? And whatever we're accepting, we're going to continue to get. And so if we don't like what we're getting, and we don't want to accept anymore, we have to lead ourselves out of it. And if you got a family, you've got to lead your family out of it. And just this whole concept of leadership being the problem and also being the solution allows for us to remember that if we're willing to hold on to extreme accountability, then then we can change it. We can improve upon it, right? And we don't have to feel like we're subject to other people's will. And if things are shitty and like there's times are bad, just leadership's the problem. It's a solution. If you work for somebody and the business isn't going well, or you don't like what's happening there, and it's a leadership thing. Like if you can't fire the leader because they're ahead of you on the food chain, well, then you can fire the company by quitting, right? And then you go and you work for somebody else that is doing a better job leading. It's always when things are bad, it's always a leadership thing. When things are good, it's always a leadership thing. And we have to lead ourselves first. And we have to get really good at that before we can ever effectively lead other people.
Yeah, I love that. Like, we are truly the problem in most cases, but we're also the solution, which, you know, can be scary to have that much of accountability sometimes for some people, but it's also very liberating because you're always the answer. You're always the one with the power to change either direction from negative to positive. So you guys listening, whatever situation you guys are in, just know and remind yourself that, you know, you got yourself in this situation, which means you guys can get yourself out of it, and you guys can put yourself in a situation that's 10 times better than what you're currently at. So I just absolutely love that right there. So thank you for sharing. And before you head out here, let us know how we can support you, man. I know you were mentioning that event that you got coming up in July, so feel free to drop that. And if there's anything else that you're working on or you're excited about, like, let us know so we can get involved.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, dude. So, you know, yeah, there's a whole variety of ways to get a hold of me, depending on where you're at. I mean, on Instagram, I'm Matt_official. We do have that event going on in July. And it's a super high level event. It's 2 days. It's in Boise, Idaho. We're going whitewater rafting. We've got a private VIP mixer at a diamond shop. We have an epic mastermind with Tim Kennedy, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, Ray Cash Care, who's a SEAL, Lindsay Schwartz, Jen Gottlieb, myself. We have a couple of panels. We have a mindset motivation workout with Ray Care, the SEAL. And then we're going to all break the world record together in the largest ice plunge, number of people doing an ice plunge simultaneously on dry land. And we're raising $100,000 in the process to donate to St. Luke's Children's Cancer Institute, which is a 501c3. So 100% of the proceeds go to them and their efforts to help kids battling cancer. And so that's in July 19 and 20. And that's at ignitionmastermind.com. They can check that out.
Amazing. Matt, you the man. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. You lead by example with your willingness to give back and do the right thing. And humanity is better and brighter because of you. Thank you so much for joining us today on the show. And just thank you so much, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Dan. Appreciate it, dude.
One last thing. I saw that that Spartan or something behind you. I was like, is that Matt behind him? Like, what is that?
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
So depending on which one you're looking at.
The one with the spear, yeah.
Yeah. So the Spartan ethos is just something that I've gravitated towards. You know, they were all about honor and, you know, courage. You know, the Battle of Thermopylae, you know, people know that, you know, the 300 versus the Persians, and just standing up in even the most like adverse circumstances, and, you know, sticking to their beliefs. And then obviously there's all the discipline component of it, the teamwork, you know, come back with your shield or on it. So just all of this stuff that the Spartans stood for when it came to being that protector and that provider for their tribe.
I love it. I've always been a Spartan over here. I started off with just like loving the mythology when I was young. Like, I was playing these video games that I shouldn't have been playing. And I was like 6 years old. Transferred into this high school that was Stevenson Spartans. Wasn't supposed to go there. Then I went to Michigan State University.
Okay.
Wasn't supposed to go there, but ended up making it happen. And now I run these Spartan races every year. So
Yeah, just man.
Maintain that that ethos that you mentioned.
Yeah, your ancestors is probably in your blood somewhere. You don't even know it.
Yeah, no, for real. Like I feel this connection, and like I actually want to get to Greece too. Like it's that strong.
Right on. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I had to just ask you about that before you head out of here, because
yeah,
it's really
yeah, that's
cool.
what that's about. Yeah, just a reminder, just to be that protector, that provider, and you know, be all in, you know, all the time with what I believe in.
Burn the boats. That's
right.
What it is.
Right, exactly. Yep, that's exactly right.
Are you ready to take charge of your health and transform your life? Well, get ready, because we have the solution for you. Introducing the NovaFusion 21-Day Wellness and Resilience Challenge, the ultimate program designed to stack massive momentum, achieve peak performance, and spark your transformation. In just 21 days, you can experience a total wellness revolution. Our challenge is jam-packed with daily inspiration, education, downloadable resources, and exciting challenges to keep you fired up and on track. But that's not all. When you join the challenge, you'll also become a member of our exclusive NovaFusion family. Together, we'll support and uplift one another as we continue to grow and thrive. Unlock the secrets of the world's best wellness and resilience practices to stay mentally and physically fit for a lifetime. From renewing healing practices to transformative high performance techniques, we've got you covered. And here's something that sets us apart. I believe in these practices so much that I'm offering a money back guarantee. That's right, if you don't see results, you can get your money back, so you have absolutely nothing to lose but everything to gain. So what are you waiting for? Take advantage of this limited time opportunity right now. Go to novafusion.co/challenge to sign up and embark on the journey of a lifetime. Let's spark your transformation together. I can't wait to see you on the other side.